Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 86 of Movie Room Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on this lovely Monday is Mark Hoffmeyer of Movies, Films, and Flicks. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Good to be here. Still in that foxhole. Still here.
Perfect.
I dug a tunnel to the other foxhole. So now I have like a 2-bedroom.
Well, that's important. It's a good way to do it.
It's nice. I did a little, there's a bathroom. There's a closet. It's great in here.
Okay, cool.
A pine tree fell on one of the entrances though. So I'm kind of, I got to figure that out.
Just be careful of, just be careful of the guy filming you.
Yeah. And some guy walked up to me and offered me a cigarette. I didn't take it because I felt a little weird about it.
You never know. It might be a good cigarette.
That's true. And the wound, I got shot in the butt, so I'm healing up. I just want you to know.
What, did it go straight through and you got 4 holes?
No, it got wedged right in the meat.
Okay, so you see, you're not as lucky as Buck was.
Yeah, exactly.
Buck had to go right through both cheeks, so he's got 4 holes.
Yeah. It hit, stuck. They took it out. I ditched the medical tent early to get back with my crew, and now here I am back in my foxhole.
Okay, well, it's important that you're back with your men. That's the you can't go wrong that way.
And I'm doing some really bad fake eating. I love Band of Brothers, but I think the worst moment of the entire series is when Donnie Wahlberg's pretending to eat, and he's just moving his fork around all over the place, making a racket. Some of the worst fake eating I've ever seen. I just want to put that out there.
Well, he's improved over the years, I guess.
Yeah. Well, they did all the dinner scenes for Blue Bloods. Like that, I think the entire thing takes place around, like, every episode has a dinner table scene.
Yeah.
So he's gotten better. Otherwise, the show would be unwatchable.
That's true. I'm actually a really big fan of Blue Bloods, but I wasn't able to get into Boston Blue. I just didn't like it as much.
Yeah.
You know. Wasn't as good. I don't know. I like the characters better on Blue Brother, Blue Bloods.
So Blue Brothers?
Blue Bloods.
They film a lot of it in Toronto, then they just shoot the exteriors in Boston. It seems odd.
You're talking about for Boston Blue?
Yeah, so it's too expensive to shoot in Boston all the time, so they shoot the stage stuff in Toronto, then they fly to Boston to shoot exteriors for the episodes. So they split time between Toronto and Boston, and it's cheaper.
Okay, that's fair.
The world needed to know that.
Yes, they did. I didn't know that. So didn't they do that also with LA, with Law and Order? They didn't film in New York, and then, you know, they just did extra. I mean, again, they did that with Seinfeld too. You know, a little different.
It's expensive, you know. In LA, you have that huge, all the stages in California. So I mean, it's just cheaper, and all the stage bases there. So it's probably cheaper to shoot. I mean, that's why everyone came to Atlanta.
That's right. You got the Georgia Film Commission or whatever it's called.
That's right. You see the peach.
That's right. There you go. Episode 86 begins with someone taking home videos. And ends with the men starting to move their way towards Foy with a voiceover by Donnie Wahlberg.
Thankfully not fake eating.
Yes.
Or no, he's just shuffling food.
No, he's not fake eating at this point, but yeah, we'll get there too. We'll talk about that.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get there. We'll start with minute one. I'm going all the way. I'm bouncing all. I'm like a pinball, bouncing all over the place. Yeah,
that's what you always are. You
know? Yeah, that's true. Embrace the chaos.
Yeah. I'm fine with that. You know, that's one of the things you take into consideration when you invite Mark Hoffmeyer onto your podcast.
And I tone it down for you.
And I appreciate that.
This is your show. So I stick to your rules.
My rules are pretty much anything good.
Oh, don't tell me that.
Mark, you've been on enough seasons to know.
Yeah, that's true.
So we ended things yesterday with us learning more about the various characters, knowing what we learned a little bit about Lipton. Lipton tried learning a little bit about Dyke. That didn't really work. Buck, going around making sure that these guys don't do anything stupid. Nobody wants to make any mistakes at this point, which makes sense.
How late in the war is it? 45 yet? When is it?
No,
45? No, not yet. Okay.
this is December 44, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, because don't we hear like the Christmas music and stuff like that?
Oh yeah. When they sit in there, true. Yeah, because they still have till May.
Yeah,
Like what?
sure. But I
Yeah.
mean, they won't be in Bastogne until May. But yeah, it's
Yeah, that's true.
they still have a very long winter ahead of them. Let's put it that way. And some of these guys are unfortunately not going to be going home. But we'll have to figure out how that's gonna play out here.
Yeah, we're not there yet.
Nope. So
Don't want any of them to die. They should have done this entire series where none of them die. And there's
and come on, this isn't like a Marvel movie. This is something that's supposed to be,
no
or like,
stakes.
wait, did you ever watch the G.I. Joe cartoon in the 80s?
Exactly,
It's
just
the
like
same thing.
that. No stakes. You
That's right.
know, everybody lives. You think people die, but then they're like, blah, 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 they shake themselves off. You know, a guy gets shot, but he has a flask. Just everything like that. And then at the end, they just all live and play baseball.
Yeah, more or less. That's the way to do
Imagine if Saving Private Ryan, no one died. Like none of the main crew died.
it wouldn't have, Ryan wouldn't have had to make it count. He didn't have these six guys or six. I mean, I did a count of how many died in the end, but of the main characters, only two of them lived. Besides Ryan himself, all you have is Jeremy Davies and oh, what's his name?
Hanks, whatever his
No,
name is.
no, no. Hanks
Oh, Hanks
dies.
dies. Oh, yeah, Edward Burns.
Edward Burns. That's what I was
Yeah.
thinking. Right.
So
They're
it's.
the only two that survive.
But if they just walk there and they're like, Ryan, he's like, yeah. All right. You got to walk back. All right. And then they walk back. And then Danny hugs his mom.
Yeah, they didn't give us that extra thing. He broke down in front of his wife. So,
Yeah. And then his it turns out his brothers actually lived, and they just got the names wrong.
that is something that has happened over the years, unfortunately.
Yep.
There are. I mean, again, going back to Saving Private Ryan, the whole idea of the Bixby brothers, that they didn't all die. They thought they
Oh.
all. And then they eventually figured out that, hey, wait a second, we made a little bit of a mistake here. Slight error in judgment or slight error in writing out the wills.
Interesting. Well, that's a pleasant surprise.
Yeah. Very true.
What I want.
Okay.
Band of
Yeah.
Brothers. All live.
You know what? It's not it. It's sad to say, but I don't think it would be as powerful
No,
as
it
it
would be
would.
horrible. It would be terrible. It would be pointless, really. It would just be kind of rah-rah stuff.
That's right.
The deaths are what make you feel, and they are heartbreaking.
And that's it's just the way it is.
That's right. And they didn't need Patton to save them.
No, well, that goes without saying.
There's a lot of dialogue. This is a dialogue heavy scene. There's
Yes,
basically
I
just
mean,
a
well,
lot
again,
of.
there's no dialogue in the home videos that they're taking. So
Yeah, but.
we see the home videos. We do recognize a lot of the characters being shot, and then they do a great transition. Showing first they show us what looks like the home video movie itself. Then we see someone. The camera then shoots the person, you know, the director shooting those home videos, and then it like it zooms out, and then we get into the command tent, and you know, we see Colonel Sink.
They'll and, die.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, he's just you know, he's on the line just with everyone else, and he goes, if they come by here, you all remember to smile for the camera. Gotta keep the morale up for the folks back home.
Why?
Damned if I know.
I feel like that's pretty obvious though. Why you want to keep morale up back home.
For us it's obvious. It might not be so obvious for
without hindsight. Oh, that's a good point. There's no hindsight at this point. They're there.
And again, you got to think about it. This is the first war where they are taking videos and using it to boost morale. And these guys are on the front. So they don't necessarily know all of the movies, you know, the newsreels that people are watching, you know, back home, or, you know, the propaganda movies, you know, trying to raise morale stateside.
And have you ever watched Five Came Back?
Yeah, I love that. Wow.
Oh, I read the book and then I watched the doc. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I think I've seen it twice. It's great.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And Sink turns to Nix and goes, all right, Nix, what have they got waiting for us in Foy? At least one company from the 10th Panzer Grenadiers dug in around here. And he points to that, and then he goes, they've also got at least 188, although we haven't been able to spot it yet. And he goes, how about armor? As of last night, three Tigers. He, you know, looks over, and at this point, basically Winters has had enough of this. He goes, would you excuse me for a moment, sir? And he goes, yeah. And then he walks out of there. And, you know, you see the cameraman once again filming people. And we see Joe Toy with his arm in a sling, you know, getting filmed by all of these guys and trying to figure out what really needs to be said about here. And then then Toy basically says, how do you feel about being rescued by Patton? He goes, well, I'd feel pretty peachy about it if it wasn't for one thing. We didn't need to be rescued by Patton.
Oh, I love that. You got that?
That's right.
I mean, it was. I mean, it still helped, but they didn't need it, if that makes sense.
Correct. Of course, no. But they're saying that he isn't the one that rescued us. We were fine without him. But you know, they all know inside that it obviously helped the situation a little bit.
What do you think about Patton's death?
I'm trying to remember how he died.
The crash, car crash.
Patton died in a car crash?
Yeah.
I do not remember that
fact. Yeah, you know, it was like he had a car crash. So he died as a result of injuries sustained in a car accident. He was riding, the Cadillac he was riding in collided with a U.S. Army truck. But there's a lot of theories about it.
Well, you think he was assassinated?
Well, I don't know. Everyone thinks there is. But yeah, he was fatally injured in an automobile accident.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it was 6 months after the war ended. He got into an accident on December 9th, 45. Yeah. And he was the only person who was actually harmed in this. And then he was paralyzed from the neck down. Wow, yeah. I never knew that. And then 12 days later, on December 21st, he died.
You know, he wanted to push into Russia and was pushing for a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of theories. I'm not really a conspiracy theorist, but sometimes when you hear about something, you're kind of like, well, that's interesting. So I looked into it. I mean, it could have just been a car crash and he died, but yeah, there's theories out there. So I just think it's interesting.
What do you think? You think he was assassinated or not?
I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I mean, he was the one injured and he crashed with his own car. Like I just don't know why you'd want to kill Patton. I've never ever, like, you know, when you watch JFK and with all the conspiracy theories, I don't think I've ever worried about conspiracy theories. I've just heard things and I'm like, that's interesting. Then I read about it. I'm like, well, it could have happened by like, you know, something could have happened or it could have been a car crash. Like, it's there's just too many facts out there that I don't know. So I don't like, you know, making a assumption, if that makes sense. I like data.
Okay. But I mean, all right, let's go on the rabbit hole here. Do you think JFK was assassinated by Oswald, or do you think it was a conspiracy?
Poof. I don't even, that's just, there's, but the problem is there's been so much doubt spread into my mind from just movies and JFK and the bullet trajectory and where the bullet bounced and people on
And
the
the moment
grassy knoll.
bullet.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many, there's so many things out there that it's hard to separate the assassination with, and then he was killed by what, Ruby killed him. So you're just, there's just so much out there that we don't know, and there's so many variables that I don't even want to look into it because there's no, nobody knows. Like, they say that he did it, but then who are these people? So it's tough. Like, I, that's why I have a hard time with true crime sometimes, because you just never know. And they're like, but did they do it? And you're like, wait, did I just watch this whole thing for like no answer? So I don't like, you know, for me, I'm like data driven. I like figuring things out. So I like figuring out how far the creature from it followed. I like running, knowing how far Tom Cruise ran in his movies. I can figure that out. And so once there's something where it's like, well, I don't know. It could be this, could be that. Like Inception, the ending of Inception, I don't care. Like, it, 'cause there's no answer to it. And so it's just not something that's bothered me. And so with the assassinations, it's like, there's so many variables. There's so many things we don't know that I just don't, I've never pursued it. That
Okay,
makes
fair
sense.
enough. Yeah, makes 100% sense.
I just, you know, sometimes you hear conspiracy theorists and you're like, "Wolf, I don't ever want to seem like them." So I got freaked out. So when I was younger, my dad, I don't know, he knew some guy. Never saw him again in my life. Real weirdo. But he sat my brother and I down and was like, "The Eagles are Satanists, and the song Hotel California is about Satanism." And he made me, like, when I was like 11 and my brother was 13, we had to sit there and listen to this guy we'd never met before, never saw again, lecture us about Satanism in LA. And I was like, this guy's crazy. And I just like, he's like, well, because of this, in this song, they say this, which means this, and then this, and this, and this. And I think maybe that's what scared me away from ever being a conspiracy theorist.
That's completely fair.
Yeah. It was a weird, I don't remember much of my youth, but I remember that. That was odd. Long story, but yeah,
I can understand it. And
I'm
then
not a conspiracy guy.
okay. I am. I love conspiracies because of the fact that there are no answers to them. So I like going down those rabbit holes, trying to figure out things. I know that I'll never know the truth. That's the whole point. It's not like someone's gonna one day show up and say, "Oh, I'm the one who did this." It's not like Mark Felt, which is that is something that nobody knew. Nobody knew who was giving information to the Washington Post. But eventually, you find out that Woodward and Bernstein were actually talking to Mark Felt. That's fine. And Felt told everyone right before he started losing, right before his dementia and Alzheimer's kicked in. So from that perspective, you can say, okay, is that true or not? Was it just a figment of his imagination or not? But again, it doesn't really matter at this point.
I just did that's it, you know, I guess it is fun to look into that, but yeah, I guess I just like, I just like numbers, and I like when numbers add up, and I like figuring things out. Or
Okay,
I like,
that makes sense.
yeah.
Makes 100% sense. And then Winters, shows up where Toy is, and he goes, "Joe, excuse us for a moment." And he goes, "Sorry, sir." He goes, "Sorry about what?" He goes, "Patton." He goes, "I couldn't agree more." "What are you doing here?" "I want to head back to the line, sir." "Joe, you don't have to do that. Get yourself back to the aid station. Heal up." He goes, "I'd really like to head back with the fellas, sir." "All right, then go. Thank you, sir." So, I mean, this is another perfect example of Winters looking out for his men, but also the men realizing that, they want to continue to be with the guys from Easy.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we've discussed this in the past, when Popeye came back, and there are a few others that came back also. after being injured. And the whole idea was is that these guys all just said, you know what? I don't want to be sent to a different unit. I want to stay with my unit. So I'm going to do all I can to be with them. And smart. I love how they're having this conversation. You know, Jotobi then takes off the sling that's holding his arm as if it's, you know, if this was a comedy, it would just be somebody who was, you know, who put on a sling, you know, as a joke in order to actually get out of fighting or something like that. But in the end, you know, here's somebody who, you know, wants to be back in the fight. And he's like, I don't really care about the sling. You know, I'm not going to be doing anything here.
I mean, you roll with the best. You train with them. You know them. It's That's good right. to have the same. And I feel like every athlete, you know, people don't want to bounce around from sports teams every week. Like, it's nice to have a team that you play with every week and you know who each person is and how they work and how, right. who the egos are. And
right. But especially these are guys that they've been with for 2.5 years.
Exactly.
You know, it's not a sports team. This is 24/7 sports team. You know, you're with guys during practice and you're with guys in the games and you're with guys, you know, during travel time or whatever it is, but you're not together all night, every night. You're not in grueling conditions like this. So, you know, this is a
times
sports
20 team. Times 7,000 of what exactly. a sports team is, but it's still good to know your team oh, and it sure. like to know how people flow. And you know, just even learning new personalities is exhausting. I imagine if you're just stuck in the middle of nowhere with constant death, like you want to know the people near you and who your friends are. And
well, it's more than that. You want to be able to trust the people near you.
Yeah, and exactly.
It's a question of trust here. You know, these are guys that they're all willing to die for, and we're going to see it, you know, over the next few weeks about how yeah. all of these guys care about one another, even when it's at their own detriment. You know, that type of thing.
There could be some bad stuff coming up.
Yes, there really is. There really is. And then Joe Toy starts, you know, walking away, and we get the voiceover from Lipton, and we hear Lipton say Joe Toy had been at the aid station for 3 days, and everybody was glad to have him back, especially Bill Garnier. And then you know, Toy shows up and he sees Garnier, and he goes, "Hey Joe, hey Bill, good to see you, pal. You too. What the hell are you doing back here? Make sure you're on top of things." "I'm on top of things. Tied my own boots once last week." Toy then begins to laugh all by myself. And then Garnier screams out. He goes, "Hey, fellas, look what I found." And then someone goes, "Hey, Joe Toy, back for more." "Hiya, Joe." "Yeah, doing pretty good. Get from the aid station. Where'd you get hit? What's that?" "Ah, it's Webb. Replacement." "Really? That was some guy I'd known for 2 years and forgot his face."
That was a good line.
Yeah. He goes, "Joe got hit in the arm. New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve gift from the Luftwaffe. So apparently, sorry, this is actually after after Christmas already.
Oh, yeah.
So again, this must be just like 3 days after New Year's Eve. He goes, "A lot of you guys have been injured. It's called wounded, Peanut. Injured is when you fall out of a tree or something. Don't worry. There's enough crap flying around here. You're bound to get dinged sometime. Almost every single one of these guys have been hit at least once." And they go, "Except for Allie. He's a two-timer. He landed on broken glass in Normandy and got peppered by a potato masher in Holland. You'll find out, son."
Bull's going to look really haunted when we get to him in your next line.
That's right.
Like he's looking kind of bummed.
That's right. And then he goes, "Now, Bull, he got a piece of exploding tank in Holland. And George Lezier, he's never been hit." He goes, "You're one lucky bastard." "Takes one to know one, Skip. Consider us blessed. Now, Liebgott, skinny little guy, he got pinked in the neck in Holland." "All right." And right next to him, that other skinny guy, that's Popeye. He got shot in his scrawny little butt in Normandy. And Buck got shot in his rather large butt in Holland. Kind of an easy company tradition. Getting shot.
I like
in
the butt shot, too, when he lifts up his jacket.
Yeah, just like, you know, he's modeling it.
Yeah.
You know,
got shot with that rather large butt.
That's right. No, I like the way that they're doing it this way because they're On the one hand, they're reminding us of things, but they're, a lot of these guys were injured mildly. We saw that they got hit and then they moved on and that was it. Just the way that they're going around explaining, all the different guys. Even like you said with Bull, he's sitting on the ground. He's not very happy, and it's nice how he's just going around explaining and pointing to different guys. Leave got when he points to him, just spits something out, whatever he's eating. Popeye just laughs.
Bola taunted.
That's right. And then as you said, Buck then points to his butt.
I think it's smart to just reiterate their names again, too, because I do remember a lot of these guys, but it is good to just remind us, hey, there's Buck, there's Lipton, there's Popeye, there's Liebgott. So it's like almost a two-thirds through
It's like a roll
refresher.
call. That's right. And then he goes, "Hey, even First Sergeant Lipton over there, he got a couple of pieces of a tank shell burst at Carrington. One chunk in the face. Another chunk almost took off his nuts." And then he screams out and goes, "How those nuts, Sarge?" He goes,
Doing
"Doing
time,
fine,
Bill.
Bill."
Nice of you
Nice of you
to ask.
to ask. So yeah, I like the way that they do that. As you said, it points out the guys, and you get to see how they're just playing with their food. None of these guys really are interested in eating this bread and gruel that they have, but it's done in a really, really fun way, I guess you can say.
I don't like what Donnie Wahlberg's up to in this scene. I like his line readings. Doing fine, Bill. Nice of you to ask. Perfect line readings.
That's right.
Bad food acting.
Yeah.
He's like the
Okay.
Big Bang Theory guys. I call that the shuffle.
Okay.
You shuffle stuff around on your plate.
And then we see the guys walking out on a patrol, and we get Lipton once again giving us a little narration. "On the afternoon of January 3rd, most of E Company headed back to our old position in the woods overlooking Foy. A few men remained in Bois Jacques, attached to D Company to hold the main line of resistance." And as they are walking out, "Good luck, ladies. Been nice knowing you." And he goes, "Wouldn't drink too much if I were you." And he goes, "Hey, be careful if he offers you a cigarette." What are they talking about? If who offers you a cigarette? Spears. Who? Lieutenant Spears. So again, it's nice how they're once again letting us have a little bit of a refresher on Spears also, because Spears is a guy that we actually will get to know even more coming up, and I like how they do that also.
I have a question. And so let's say the actor's paid for life, right? The actor will have an incredible amount of money, but won't work ever again after this, just so you can keep the sanctity of their character. Which character would you not want to see another movie just so you could think of them as their character? Does that make sense?
I understand the question. You see, the difficult way to answer the difficult problem with your question is that most of these guys, I would love to see more about them. Like I would want to see what happened to Spears in more situations. I would want to see more what happens to Winters. I mean, these are like iconic characters from this story. So it's like, would I want to freeze any of them in time and say, okay, this is, all I want to know about this character? And that's a problem.
No, I'm the actor. So when I saw Matthew Settle, the guy who plays Lieutenant Spears in other roles, it kind of demystified Spears for me, because
I
in
gotta
this
say,
show,
I never saw him in any. I don't even remember seeing him in any other role.
oh, he's in like a Gossip Girl, Band of Brothers.
Okay,
He's
well,
been in a
obviously
bunch.
we know he's in Band of Brothers.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm sorry. Into the West. He's in like a Ouija and other movies, but I've seen him before, and I remember kind of being annoyed about it, and just not annoyed, but just like he's in the In Crowd as well, but that came out before this, but. for me, like, this guy is such a legend, Spears, that when I see the actor, I'm like, that's not Spears. So it's not fair to him. Like, it's fair, but the way that this character is just so such a badass. And so whenever I saw him later on, I'm like, man, that's Spears. Like, I like him, but
right,
it demystifies Spears a little bit, and that's not fair to the actor. Right. And he's had a great career, but if I knew that he was super rich and living a great life and never appeared in something else, and the last role he did was Spears, I'd be happy. It's a really random thing to say, but it's Spears is such a great character because we don't spend that much time with him, but he's like, right, so cool. And he runs, brings things back, murders people. He makes jokes about the cigarettes. Like, I think they handle his character well. They do a good job of like making him a legend almost, and just like the best. And so that's just kind of my thought. If that makes, like, I watched Damian Lewis in Homeland, and you know, Fakim Hall. Like, just I could watch it. You know, Ron Livingston. But whenever I see Spears, I'm like, man, that's Spears. So yeah, that's my one thought. That's one to throw out there.
Okay. All right. Sorry, I couldn't really give you a definitive answer on that one. But yeah. But yeah, you're probably right. You know, having Matthew Settle as Spears, I think, is a great way to remember the actor.
Like, I would love to do one movie, and then that, like, just awesome. I'm like, awesome in that one movie, then I never do another one. So people just remember that character. If that makes, like, just one, yeah. I have one movie character. Like, imagine if, like,
see, the irony is that most actors don't want to be pigeonholed into one character. Yeah.
But no, that's it. Like, I never even do that character again. I just have one movie, and it's perfect. Like, imagine if Sigourney Weaver's only movie was Alien, or they skip Alien, do Aliens. Like, if Sigourney Weaver only acted in one film and it was Aliens, you would just be like, where did she, like, who, where did she go? Like, what, this is a legend. So that's, there's like a weird, it's not fair to the actor, but I'm just, you know, we got to fill time on these minute by minute shows.
No, we don't. We don't have to fill time. We're doing fine.
Okay. I just think it's interesting because whenever Spears is a legend, and you just, when you see him in like Gossip Girl, you're like, that's not Spears. So
I'll have to check something out with him just to be able to answer that.
Okay.
I'll get back to you on that one, Mark.
Please do.
And then Spears walks by, and then we get another narration by Lipton. Lieutenant Ronald Spears was one of the platoon leaders in D Company. He was already a legend. The stories about Spears are probably all bullshit anyway. What stories? Well, supposedly Spears shot one of his men for being drunk. You're kidding. That's unbelievable. Yeah, there's another one about him giving cigarettes to 20 German POWs before killing them. He shot 20 POWs? Well, actually, I heard it was more like 30. And then Spears walks by and goes, Christensen. He goes, Lieutenant Spears. I got the name right, didn't I, Christensen? Yes, sir. What are you men doing out here? We're watching the line, sir. We'll keep up the good work. You want to reinforce your cover? Sir, Lieutenant Dyke said not even to bother. That we're only going to be here one day. Lieutenant Dyke said that, huh? I forget what I said. Carry on. And then he turns to them and goes, oh, anyone care for a smoke?
Smoke?
You?
Well, I love that scene.
It's great how it's great how he makes the jokes about it. You know, just to basically say, look.
You know, I love that scene.
You wanna make comments about what I'm doing and stuff like that? That's perfectly all right. No problem. But you're gonna have to deal with me.
It's so funny how he does that too. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know,
Christensen, we got a Fassbender scene here. This is a lot of Fassbender, right? He doesn't get this much in this. Like, this is a big scene for him, is it not?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of Fassy.
Yeah, and I like how Percante is brushing his teeth.
Yeah, that's a good touch. Can't be good for the sound guy, but. Like when Wahlberg was going ham on his food, you could hear it. So you don't really hear any of the background noise, but you hear his plate going smack, 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 smack. So that must have been chaos for the sound people.
Right. and And then when Spears offers them cigarettes, so at that point, Percanti just looks down and starts brushing really quickly.
There is some good humor in this. This show does do a good job of, like the butt shot, and then the patent bit, and then the cigarette thing. It does a good job of injecting little bits of humor into it. So it's not like a dour affair, which I like.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And then, we see the guys start walking, through the woods, and Lipton once again gives us a little bit of narration. He goes, late in the afternoon on January 3rd, we return to our old position in the woods overlooking Foy. And that is how this 5-minute segment ends, as the guys are starting to, they're getting back to their foxhole.
Good chapter.
Yeah.
Bad eating. Yeah.
That's right, bad eating, but still, it does a nice job of giving us an idea as to, the different types of things that these guys go through, even when it's in some ways comedic.
Yeah.
So I like the way that they add that in there. Just to give us a little bit of a touch of humor along the way before, some of the really is going to start hitting the fan.
Well, whoever made this was pretty good.
Yeah, what's that young guy's name?
The producers were pretty good. Oh, man.
Exactly. All right, so is there anything else you want to say about Band of Brothers or about this particular 5-minute segment?
It's a refresher minute. It's a total refresher. But it's done well. I think it moves the story forward because Toy comes back, reintroduces the crew, it reintroduces them, brings us back into Spears because he's about to have a moment. Yeah, so it's good writing, and the fact that it's a good refresher, I think. It does, because you know what's interesting about it, it's one thing when you tell a movie, and I know Matt Damon said that Netflix wanted them to reiterate the plot 3 times during the film because when people watch Netflix, they're not really watching Netflix, they're on their phones. But when you are doing a weekly show, you need these refreshers because, you have a great episode, then a week later, there's another hour. So I think by the 7th episode, if you've been watching it week to week, this refresher is helpful. So it's not cynical in like a Netflix style. It's just more of a TV format in which you need the writing to refresh the audience, and I like that. And it's done eloquently, and I like it.
Okay, very cool.
The eating's bad.
Okay, the question is if you throughout the entire series, do you think the eating is bad, or just specifically?
I know a scene is not so for me. I know a scene is not effective. The mise en scène when it takes me out of the scene, so. When I'm watching this, I'm into it. But then I just started staring at what he was doing with his food. I'm like, that doesn't look right. And then that takes you out of the world. So I think anything like that that happens in a film is not like a success because it just takes you out of that. And so whenever I notice bad eating, I just laser focus in on that. And I love Brad Pitt, but like a couple movies recently, he's just moving stuff around and it's clear he's not eating. He's just moving things around because he wants to keep his hands busy. But then my eyes go there and then I'm not thinking about the movie anymore. So I think you just got to, you got to keep people in the world. I think as filmmakers are concerned, just do whatever you can to, but I mean, it's such a minor gripe, but it still did it. So, if that's my one complaint about the entirety of Band of Brothers is that is Wahlberg pushing food around, then it's doing pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. I give you that one. All right, so today's segment is called Oh Brother, where my guest will give their top 5 movie brothers. So, Mark, why don't you once again start with your number 5 and work your way up?
Okay, so I'm going to go with number 5 with Logan Lucky. And it's an entire family, but I just like the Logans. I like Melly Logan. I like Clyde Logan. I like Jimmy Logan. Channing Tatum and Adam Driver. Soderbergh film. It's a like, listen, this movie rules. Logan Lucky rules. Daniel Craig is really good in it, but I love Tatum and Driver together as brothers. So that's my number five.
Okay.
I like that a lot. And then my next one is A Simple Plan, which is probably one of my all-time favorite films ever made. I think it's one of the best thrillers ever made, or crime thriller ever made. And, you know, Billy Bob and Bill Paxton, Hank and Jacob. So I just like their relationship and how everything goes horrifyingly wrong. So I love that. And also I worked with both those guys and they're awesome. And I know I say that a lot, but I spent many years on film sets, and those two guys I look at as just, I just revere them because they were so cool. I love my time on their films that I worked with them on.
What films did you work with them on?
Oh, so I was on a movie called Jane Mansfield's Car, which was written, produced, directed, and starring Billy Bob Thornton. It had Robert Duvall, John Hurt. I was Ray Stevenson's stand-in before he passed away, obviously. But Kevin Bacon was in it, and the awesome lady from The Pit is in there. Robert Patrick, like gigantic cast.
Wow.
And I was a stand-in, and I just spent most of like. It didn't shoot over many days. It was like maybe 5 weeks, but they just kept bringing me back for other roles. And I just stand in for John Hurt. And I had to make myself really small, but I was just sitting there and they're lighting me and I'm next to, you know, this Academy Award nominated guy. I'm the guy who shot all the pretty horses. And I was just absorbing everything they said. And then they kept me around for more work. And, you know, like Billy Bob, he spent 45 minutes with one of the other stand-ins who was having a bad day. And you just talked to him. And he wanted a good vibe on his set. And he'd always be like, "Hey, Mark, hit your mark." Like he would say that. And he was just kind of a cool dude. And I loved the professionalism of that. And then I was brought in for this movie called Million Dollar Arm. I was an additional PA, but I helped with first team. So what days when there was a lot of actors on set, I would help out. So they would show up. I would get them in there. I would get them breakfast. And then you get them through wardrobe. Then you get them through hair and makeup. You get them to set. They do their scene. If a scene takes place on another day, you got to get them back to wardrobe. Then you got to get them back to makeup. And then you got to get them back to sound to get rewired. And then you just watch them, you know, just with them all day on set, just getting them back and forth and making sure they're on time. You know, I got, you know, just dealing with all that. But Bill Paxton was there and he was a coach. And I just got to follow him around for a lot. And like, he was just awesome. He like would run in the catering and make his own sandwiches and just chatting. And he hated the hat I wore. He's like, "Mark, I got to get you a new hat, man." Cause I had a big straw hat. Everyone has a straw hat on set. And I would walk into a lot of things. So I had a hole in the front. Because I'm, you know, 6'4", so that gave me extra inches. So I just clunk it into everything. And had a hole in the front. But he was just awesome talking to me about James Cameron movies and books. And he's like, "You know, I directed this movie Frailty. Everyone loved it. I did this golf movie. I loved it, but it kind of put me in director's jail. Like, I just want to get out there." It was just awesome hanging out with him. And so, yeah, that was a long, long thing. But just whenever I see their movies or A Simple Plan, it just makes me happy.
Very cool.
That was a long answer, but
I love those long answers, Mark. Good.
I had a good time. I spent many years on set, so it was cool. It was cool. I love those guys. So Simple Plan. Number three, I'm going with Darjeeling Limited. I love the like Owen Wilson, or what Francis, Peter, and Jack. I love those guys. And I you know, they take a trip, international trip around India on a train. And there's one of my favorite scenes involving luggage, like losing your, like throwing away your luggage and your baggage. And I love it. That's like a great brother movie. Number two is Too Fast, Too Furious. Now, Brian and Roman are not biological brothers, but they are great friends. And I think if the Fast and Furious franchise is about family, the friendship between Brian and Roman, the brotherhood between them, is the strongest. Everyone thinks about Brian and Dom, but I think Brian and Roman are the best brothers. They're just idiots, and I love them together. And they squabble like brothers and are yelling at each other, punching each other in the arm. Like sometimes when you get with your older brother, you just act younger. You like slug them in the arm and you're like, "Idiot." And I love them. So Too Fast, Too Furious.
That is like not surprising at all that Mark Hoffmeyer would have a Fast and Furious movie on this list.
And, you know, so I have the car. I have the Lego car, Brian, from Too Fast, Too Furious. And now my daughter wants one. She's like, "Dad, share." And so she wants to go get her own and have me make it so we both can have Brian cars from Too Fast, Too Furious. And I've never been happier because she's a legend. So I love that. And then
can you both have the same car, or do you need to have different cars?
She likes to match. So like Megan got this mug and then Mallory wants to match. And Megan has jammies, Mal has the same. She just likes to match with us. So she goes, Dad, match. And so I'm like, yeah, I'll get you anything you want. And you're gonna grow up very spoiled, but I don't care because we're gonna teach you right and you're gonna be awesome. So yeah. And then number one, it's two movies, but I can't decide and I don't care. It's Legends of the Fall and A River Runs Through It.
All right, well, you got to pick one. You got to pick one.
I guess alphabetical. A River Runs Through It.
All right.
That was tough.
I can imagine, but if you want, we can bump everything down, and then Logan Lucky can move down
No,
to
no, no, no,
two. No,
no,
you can move down to an
no.
honorable mention, because if your number one was so difficult for you to make that choice.
I got a pit in one. I'm happy with it. We can stop it. Yeah. Pit stop. I don't need two. I like my, I should probably do Too Fast, Too Furious number one, but I feel like this list is very me, so I'm happy with it.
I'm very glad that this list is for you. I wouldn't want it any other way.
That's right. I have my Darjeeling Limited print on the wall here that I'm looking at. I got my new Fancy Simple Plan disc. I got all my Fast and Furious stuff around here. So yeah, that's good. I like it. And then River Runs Through It. I mean, it's like an ultimate dad movie. Have you seen A River Runs Through It?
Yeah, sure. Tom
Oh
Skerritt.
yeah. Yeah, of course.
Now, I'm sure you can find movies that I haven't seen, Mark, if that's what you're laughing
Yeah, but no, but like, River Runs Through It. Come on. Like that's like a cable classic.
I'm quite familiar with it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if I saw it in the theater or if I saw it when it came out on cable at the time, back in 92.
It was always on.
Yeah, that's great. All right, and now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So let's spin the wheel and see what Mark.
No.
Round and round and round the wheel goes.
I'm more awake today. I'm sick, but I'm more awake, which is good. What do we
Right,
got?
this is a movie that came out in 2001. Okay, and it takes place during the war, the Battle of Stalingrad.
Enemy at the
You want to
gates.
guess? There you go. I was gonna let you guess before I give any more information about it. And stars Jude Law, Ed Harris, and Joseph Fiennes.
I did do a sniper thing once. I had to figure out who was the best sniper in movies, and I had to buy it and watch it for all and like take notes on how good they were.
Okay, and
So
who was the best sniper?
don't remember. Like I said, my brain is a I can remember the movie, but my brain is like a bucket that's full of water. Anything new comes in, something goes out. So I don't remember. But you can go to fandom and see best movie sniper, and you can see who
I mean,
won.
I know that, like in the Star Wars universe, they say that Padme is apparently the best shot out of everybody.
That's funny. I did
Yeah,
an archery thing. I got paid to do an archery thing as well, and Rambo won. He's like 100%.
what do you mean, Robin Hood's not better than Rambo?
Robin Hood misses sometimes, and Legolas even doesn't have some kill shots. Rambo's just kill like he's just murdering people left and right.
Well, it's because if you well, there's a difference between, shooting a regular arrow and shooting an arrow that has a like a grenade on
No, but when he's in the jungle, he's tagging people too, though. And then he has his later movies where he's just knocking people out as well with a bow and arrow.
Okay.
I have some weird jobs. So.
Well, yeah, but if you enjoy doing them, that's the important thing.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with that. No problem with that at all. All right, so Mark, would you like to once again, for a final time, tell people where they can find Mark Hoffmeyer?
Yeah, this is Movies, Films, Flicks, and Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, and A River Runs Through It minute.
Okay, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.com. www.bandabrothers.net. So, Mark, thank you very much once again for joining me. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is good.
Yeah, it's always fun talking to you, especially when you know, you tell me about the things that annoy you in movies, the people fake eating, stuff like that. So, you know, that works.
This format keeps me a little bit more sane, too, and it holds my attention span better, so I like it.
Because we're only talking about 5 minutes instead of an entire chapter?
Yeah.
I like it. Okay, that is fair. That is fair. All right, so I'll be back tomorrow with another guest, but until then, Curry!
Curry!